Well, that was some tomfuckery. Locked in the bunker, shadows shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am 50% of the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. Does that make me half a man? Maybe, but I'm kind of okay with that as I'm here at the table with my one true wingman joining me as we unwrap the year that was, the voice of reason, the rock of sanity, the keeper of the rulebook, the bane of the labyrinth, the horror to my Arkham, the one and only Super Trooper. Happy New Year, Super Trooper.
Happy New Year, James, and Happy New Year to all the listeners.
It is January 1, 2026. We're starting the year off right with a bonus episode. And today we're going to be doing the 2025 Unwrap. A little different. There's a couple of top 10s, or there's a top 10. There's some of our favorite stuff of the year. It's not so much as a... It's not so much a top 10 games of all time. It's not so much a... What was... I'm going to hand to you, because this was, you know, it was mostly you ride the bus and drive the bonus content. So talk us through what we're doing today.
Well, it's funny, when it comes to wrapping up for the year, I know I don't, and I'm pretty sure you're almost there with me, we don't play enough games from the current year, and I don't think we play enough games from the current year enough. I know, I don't personally, rank them that well.
And part of that's our geography. We are based in Australia. So if it's a Kickstarter or a crowdfunding game, we get it first. Because we are only a hop, skip, and a jump from China. But if it's a retail game, remember when Nucleum came out, it was a 2023 game. We didn't get it till June 2024. So part of it is our geography sort of hurts us in that. And that if we do get a 2025 release, it's very, very late in the year, usually. Unless it's something super mass-produced. You know, the Stonemaier game, for example.
We've also got a nice big backlog of older games.
Yes. So what did you call it? The cult of the last year? Cult of the more mature?
Cult of the maybe 2 years ago.
Cult of the 2 years ago. So, this is our end of 2025. January 1, it's all fucking downhill from here, right? This is as good as it gets. Right here, right now, the year is in bloom. It's brand new. It's day one. It's never going to be as good as it is right now.
I know. We've got most of 365 days left this year.
That's right. And we did, spoiler alert, finish 2025 with the bang. We were celebrating New Year's Eve last night, the family Super Trooper and family Hammers. And at 9:30, I turned to you and said,
"Do you want to play Voidfall?" I mean, I looked at you like, haha, funny joke.
Yeah.
And then you just stared back at me like, this wasn't a joke.
Well, I'm game if you are, like calling my bluff. And then I've never seen a pit crew set Voidfall up so fast. We
didn't even say goodbye to our wives.
No, we didn't.
We just ran out of the room.
Zoom dust is like the Bugs Bunny dust trail in the room. And yeah, so we got a two-player game of Voidfall in as our last game of 2025. And I can't think of a better way to finish it off. So to start, we're going to do a top 10 list. And what's the top 10 list?
Top 10 new games to us that were not from 2025.
Yes. So our favorite 10 plays of the year that weren't from 2025.
Yeah. Of new games.
New games to us.
Yes.
I want to make sure I've got my list right. Because if it's new games, I'm screwed. But new games to us.
Yep.
Yeah. These were all, mine is all games I played for the first time in 2025. And these were my favorite plays of the year. So starting off at 10.
Number 10 was Hands of Teutonica.
Ah, so talk through, Hands of Teutonica has been in your collection a little while.
It's been there a long, long time. Finally got to play it. Only played it the once so far. And that was at PlayCon, five-player game.
Five-player at PlayCon.
And it was great.
I really enjoyed it, you know, and I can get a little bit ambivalent sometimes on the beige era. I like a lot of that era's games. Like I like a lot of Kanitsia's games, but there's a lot of his games I'm really ambivalent on. I'm really lukewarm, and this is a hot take, but I'm really lukewarm on El Grande. Like, I know it's an evergreen, and everyone loves it, and I'm like, I'll play.
It's okay that you're wrong sometimes.
Yeah, it can be.
But Hands of Teutonica. Like,
back on topic.
Refill some cubes, put some cubes out. That's the game. It becomes nasty. It's great. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Looking forward to playing it again.
Yep. So mine is a game that I played... I only played it once solo, and I won a copy at PAX 2024. I won a copy, and it was one. I actually had one of the. It's funny. I had one of only two copies in Australia at one point, and I'm like, we should.
And play now it. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, and we still haven't played it as a group. But I had like one of the advanced copies because I won it at PAX 2024, and that game is Daitoshi. Now, Daitoshi is it's a Devir game.
It is
a Devir game. It's not one of their sort of small box games. I believe Daitoshi is Danny Garcia.
Oh, I can't remember that wrong.
Hang on, I'm going to pause and get the box. Yes. It is Danny Garcia. And I will say that the game mechanics in Daitoshi, they are just ever so slightly overwrought. I do think there's like 1.5 mechanisms in there that's just like one level, but they don't bog the game down. You just look at it and go, do we need that? Like, do we need that? There's a bus. There's a bus driven by a gigantic caterpillar that goes round and round, and you get something out of it. But Daitoshi's this steampunk era. It's fabulous. It's a really fabulous game, and it's got this wonderful mechanic in that as you explore out into the board, you anger the spirits of the land.
Well, isn't it in the Botoku cinematic universe?
It is. So it takes place before, after Botoku, but before Sand. And basically every time you build a new era in the Daitoshi city, you anger the resident spirits. And
destroy all the nature.
Yes, and part of your player board, if you anger too many of them, shuts down. They basically curse you. And so you've got this great push-pull on what do I want to do versus what can I do. I really am looking forward to getting that to the table with everybody. Daitoshi is my number 10. I really enjoyed Daitoshi.
Number 9 for me is Marco Polo.
Yes.
Which we were just talking about this morning, as apparently there's a new version of it coming.
Yeah, Bord & Dice announced this morning that with Hans im Glück, they're going to be releasing a brand new whiz bang. It's going to crowdfunding, but it's going to be a reprint with all yummy stuff, chunky stuff, bits and pieces. So Marco Polo.
Really enjoyed it. That's one that's been sitting on the Super Trooper shelf of shame for quite a while. Only got it played once because I think you got to play it with 4 players.
Yeah.
And trying to get 4 sometimes when there's other games wanting to get played. It got pushed out a bit, but I'm really looking forward to playing that again. It's the game where, I think we mentioned in the last episode, depending on what time things come out,
yep.
It's broken, but broken in a good way. Everyone's broken.
It's broken. It's like... Yeah, it's broken like Cthulhu Wars. It's broken like Root, where everyone's got these powers.
Dice worker placement game where you roll a dice and then the value in the dice you can send somewhere. But one of the powers is set your dice to whatever number you want.
Yep.
Right. And you think, how, what, in dice? That's broken. But someone else can
move across the entire board.
Yeah, someone else gets gold every time they do something. Or like, it's just broken as, but loved it.
Nice. My number 9, I'm going to give you a guess or two. The game we played... that is the absolute least likely to be on this list. Yeah, there's no way you would think this is on my list. Not in a...
Well, then I've got... Is it in this room?
It's not in this room.
It's not in this room with us now.
It's in your collection.
Oh.
It's one that Beelzebubbles likes to play.
Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza?
Jesus Christ, no. No, but it might as well, but it's not quite. This is a positional abstract with pastries.
Oh, donuts.
Donuts was my number 9... It was such a surprise. You pulled this box out that looked like tic-tac-toe with Homer Simpson's favorite treat on the front. But it's this positional abstract where you can pre-plan ahead and box your opponent into a corner. It's like donut chess. And I just loved it. I loved it. There's not much to it, right? This is going to be a $20 game or something. And you pulled it out going, look, don't get your hopes up, but this is one of the Bubbles' favorite games and we're going to play donuts. So I'm like, sure. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I thought it was fun. Not just fun, I thought it was interesting. And it reminded me just a little bit, I know you haven't played, but when I was a kid, I played a lot of Othello.
Yeah, you mentioned that at the time.
I played a lot of Othello. You know, there were only 5 board games in 1979, you know, and other than Clue and Monopoly and Game of Life and Trouble and, you know, Parcheesi and Chinese Checkers. Interesting, Chinese Checkers was invented in Germany. There's nothing Chinese about it. We played a lot of Othello. And it reminded me of that. And it could be that's why I enjoyed it. It just took me back to that. But Donuts, it's a great little game.
It's so simple.
So simple. 12 minutes or whatever to play.
Oh, less.
Was it less?
It's like 4 minutes.
Was it 4? I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Surprise, motherfucker. Donuts.
Number 8, Zolkin.
Zolkin.
On the string of going through the older Euros
yep.
that I finally got to play, Zolkin.
And you have had Zolkin for years,
I think. A long, long time.
Yeah.
Finally got it played.
Yeah.
The it's great. It's like a worker placement where you got to think a few turns in advance.
Yeah.
You know, you put your work on this gear. The gear moves around. Your worker gets better and you've got to choose when to pull them off to get the benefit.
And you end up fucking yourself nine ways. It's one of, yeah.
Yeah, when you realise your workers are all out, and but they're not where you want them to be yep. when you take them off. And
yep.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Looking forward to playing it again.
It was a great game. Well, my number 8 hasn't been in my collection for a particularly long time, but it's a 2014 game.
Ooh, that's old for you.
Old for it's old for all of us. And I bought it. It wasn't so much on a whim. It's obviously I'd looked at it, and then Jeff Bezos had it on sale for a good price. And we all have loved it, and that's Five Tribes.
Yes.
Five yes. Tribes has been around a long time, and it is such a simple... It's, again, simple to learn. It's a Mancala mechanic where you pick up all the dudes in one space, and you march them around the map, and where you finish up is where you get to activate. And if you don't play particularly well, you can shut the board down. You only get half a game because you might take the turn you want, but it's actually gonna, if you can't get into certain... I loved it. Still love it. Five Tribes. I think we ended up playing it 3 or 4 times this year.
We only played one game, 4 players, and the rest has all just been you and me.
It plays great at 2.
Yeah, loved it.
It plays great at 2. And so that's Five Tribes from 2014. That was my number 8 favorite play of the year new to me.
Well, spoilers. That's not on my list. I completely forgot about it.
Oh!
And it would be... It would up be. There, it would be way up there. Yeah. I enjoyed it that much.
Yeah.
So just very quick, loved it. Yeah, absolutely love Five Tribes. It's a shame the expansion.
Expansion is just out of print. I mean,
$300 on eBay.
Oh no, I don't love it that much. I don't love it that much. But I, you know, like all things, it's like it'll get a reprint one day.
Number 7 for me, Shackleton Base.
Shackleton Base number 7. All right.
Yes. I enjoyed it. I didn't get it. I think the first time playing it.
Yep.
And I think the second time I got it a bit more, and yep. I think it'll start to rise. And I'm loving the design choices at the moment, where you have these like modular Euros,
yep.
where you're like, here's 75% of the game, and now you're going to choose some factions or some corporations yep. or something
yep.
that'll make up the last 25%, and it'll change every time.
Yep. Like SETI did that as yep. well this year. Yep.
I love that setup. And I think it's very smart from a publishing point of view.
I do too, because expansions are a yep. piece of cake.
Here's 3 new corporations. Yep. Boom, throw them in.
Nice.
So yeah, really loved it. Looking forward to more plays, seeing different combinations of these companies in there.
Yep.
And yeah, just I think getting it a bit more and having some more fun games of it.
Well, my number 7... I didn't play with you. I played with Project Out of the Cracker at PlayCon. You guys were playing something else. Probably El Grande.
Some cities that are underwater.
There's some cities that are underwater. That's Underwater Cities by Vladimir Suki. Now, Underwater Cities is from 2018, so it's also going back. It's a 7-year-old game. I bought that very early on because I saw it, and I read the rules. And I looked at some place. I thought, that just looks fantastic. And I bought it. And then I bought the expansion without having played the base game. Largely because, not for the expansion content, but the base game comes with Ark Nova style cards to play on.
Oh, yeah.
And you're putting all these incy wincy tiny little, well, not tiny, but like really frictionless pieces, right? It's like a game of shuffleboard on this one card, but the expansion comes with dual layered boards. Final. Well, triple layered because they're double sided, but dual layered boards, so it locks everything in place. I played Underwater Cities with Project Out of the Cracker at PlayCon, and it was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. I think it's a wonderful game. It's, you know, you've got multi-use cards that you're using either to enhance your action or they can go into your tableau. And the economy is fantastic. It's tight, but not to the point where you want to stab yourself in the ear. Like, Underwater Cities was fantastic. That was my number 7. We played it. Yeah, loved it. Can't wait to play that one again. Yeah, Underwater Cities, number 7. Awesome.
Number 6 for me is a very, very late entry to the list.
Oh,
like 2 days.
2 days. I know what this is.
This is Orbit.
Oh, Orbit. I was going to, there's another one I was going to pick, but no, it's Orbit.
So we had the pleasure of playing Orbit just a couple of days ago. Project L owns that. She brought it down for us. Had been looking to play it for a while. It was so good that you asked to borrow it.
I did.
And we played it again last night.
We played it last night with the Fox and with Buttercup. And yep. They loved it. And bad news, you can't buy the playable version.
It's out of stock everywhere. Out of stock. You've already looked, have you?
I have. I looked this morning and thought, oh, I wonder what that is. So you can get Orbit with all the cardboard pieces, and they are reprinting the wooden chonky bits, but at coming at an indeterminate time.
But all but as I think I mentioned one of the socials, an up and coming designer, Ryan Kinitsia. At a race game,
900th game of this quarter.
And I remember we're explaining it. Martha played that first game with us, and we're explaining it to her, and she's just like, "Huh?
Yeah.
What?" And then smoked us and won.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the race is just literally around intersections of this hexagonal grid type situation with planets just moving, orbiting around. Who knows what they're orbiting around? Because they're not really following.
Right. They've got a set orbit, but it's a wild pattern. Yeah. And so you're chasing planet, the green planet, and you think you're going to get there, and two turns later, it is on the other side of the galaxy.
And just like in real life, you can turn the direction of the planets around, and they start orbiting different directions, and it's so much fun. And it's such a simple, after you explain the rules, it's simple to play.
It is simple to play.
You got a hand of cards, play a card, move that distance, move a planet maybe.
And, you know, pardon the pun, but there are a lot of moving pieces in that game.
Literally.
Right? But it is a blast, and as I said to you last night, I'll be shocked if this doesn't appear in one of our collections, even though it's in Project L's. Just it's the kind of game that I know the Fox would play happily. She had a great time last night, and she actually got the last sort of 10%. You can see, you can always know when she gets up on her elbows and she stops listening to anything around the table that you've got her attention with the game. And she's not normally very competitive, but she drilled in on that one. It was fantastic.
I think one of the best things about it, and you can tell, you know, Big Niz has designed it, is there's always a way to do it.
Yeah.
You think, oh, all the planets have orbited to the other side of the map.
Yep.
It's like, no, there's little warp points
you can do.
A little bonus token that can launch you across the map to get back to where, like, you're always in it. Like, even when you think you're out, you're always in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Good pick. My number six is now, this is, I think, the oldest game on my list that's new to me. Oh, it's tied with Five Tribes. It's another game from 2014.
Oh, yes.
And I played this at PAX last year with Lou. And it came up, it was on my radar because one of the Board Game Barbecue team had talked about a play. And I thought, oh, that sounds really good. And that is Scoville. So
you actually got to play that at PAX?
Yes, I played it at PAX. It was on an episode about five episodes ago.
I don't really listen to you that much.
I know, right? And so I played Scoville. Now, Scoville is about farming chili peppers. And it's got a little bit of a Scholars of the South Tigris thing in that if you have a red chili pepper and a yellow chili pepper, you make an orange chili pepper. And as the colors get more complicated to make, they obviously get more, they're worth more points, they're more powerful. But you've also got this field. So you've got to plant peppers and then you've got to harvest peppers. And so basically you're on this field. It's like a 20 by 20 grid and your little farmer's out there. And on your turn, you're going to play a card. I think it's a card play. It's a long time ago. And you move through the field, and every pepper you pass, you get to pick up, right? So if you pass a red plant, you pick up a red pepper. If you pass a blue plant, you pick up a blue pepper. And then there's an opportunity later to crossbreed those in a way. And you're also planting new peppers. And it's got this great sort of three-level economy because you've got a market at the start of the turn where you're going to market to collect peppers that go into your little puddle of peppers that's hidden behind a little screen. And then you've got recipe fulfillment, like it'll be called Uncle Bob's Chili. And Uncle Bob's Chili needs two blue peppers, two red peppers, an orange and a green. So you've got recipe fulfillment and you get huzzah points out of that. It was actually remarkably easy to teach, you know, and we went in cold. I just opened the rule book and Lou sat down and we were playing in 15 minutes. We got to the end and she doesn't say this off, but she looked at me and she goes, "Dad, you got to buy this game.
It's out of print everywhere, isn't it?"
Well, Scoville's second edition is out, but not in Australia. So you can pre-order it from like Dean and Evan Games, for example. But it's like a lot of these sort of new release games, really ambivalent on when it's coming. So Scoville Second Edition's coming and it's quite deluxe. You've got lovely little plastic peppers and they've got little symbols on them that for color blinds, you know. Scoville was great. It was great, great, great. Once that's released, I will absolutely be picking it up because I think it's interesting and I think the way the different mechanics interplay is wonderful and so much fun.
Number five for me is my biggest game on this list. Big box. There's even a second big box with all the expansion stuff, and that is Scarface 1920.
Okay, nice.
Really, really enjoyed it. Nice big area control game.
Yep.
The area controls and the purpose of recipe fulfillment.
Yep.
That's what it basically comes down to.
Now, that's technically a last year game, but I don't think you've got it.
From a few years ago, like maybe 2022.
Oh, but you got the reprint last year.
Correct, yeah.
But it didn't deliver till this year, but that's right, it was a reprint last year. Well, yeah. So 2023 reprint, actually.
Possibly. It was one of those games where They release it on, you know, crowdfunding. It delivers. It does well. So they do another crowdfunding straight away. Because I
think it was Tom Bassell's best production of 2023.
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous production.
Yeah. Lots of great bits on that.
Yeah.
And it is Fuck You the Game.
Yeah.
Scarface 1920 is.
But the game fucks you as well.
Yeah.
With, you know, some of those raid cards that come out. But yeah, absolutely loved it. Looking forward. Haven't played it four player yet. Really looking forward to playing it four
player. I think so, because I think the more clogging up you have on that board, the more fun it's going to be, because you're in each other's faces. Because even at three, when we played it at three, because the way the board layout was, I think it was me. I was off on my own on one side of the board, and I kind of just had time to, you know, because you really got to get up all up in everyone's business in that game.
You have to, otherwise it's the only way to stop someone from winning.
Yeah.
Is to go in and swoop and take there. Like in our game, like myself and Voldemort had a bit of a fight, and you just sailed through, I think, at the end and won, because we were too busy fighting.
I can't remember if I won, but I remember enjoying it. I can never remember if I win a game, you know, because I remember I lost Voidfall last night. But not by much.
It was close.
It was close. We got to the end and you went, oh, pipped it. I'm like, who pipped it, buddy? And like, who pipped it? And it was like, oh. Nice.
Yeah, looking forward to playing more of it.
Me too. Now, my number five, I'm going to call it I'll name a game, but it's that whole system. I just discovered that system this year. It's the Clank system.
Yes.
So Clank, we picked up Clank, borrowed Clank in Space from Project L, and I played that with the Peanut, and she went, ooh, me likey, I like this one, Dad. And so I picked up Clank Catacombs, which I've since played a couple of times here in the bunker with the family. And I played that with Lou and the Fox and the Peanut, and it was fabulous. But we started as a group, we started Clank Legacy Season 1, which I am thoroughly enjoying. And I just think the Clank system, Clank Catacombs is 2022. I don't know when the other Clanks predate it by quite a bit. I think the original Clank is something like 2017. I think it's a wonderful game system. I've had an absolute blast playing three different iterations of it this year. I think it's got that lovely race element. It's got that Quest for El Dorado feel. And I think maybe it's just the theme of it. Because there's Quest for El Dorado. It's got a little Indiana Jones theme, but it's very light on. And I just think, you know, Clank in Space, Clank Catacombs. It's got that fantasy and sci-fi. And again, it's just a skin. It could be Clank Grocery Store. Get in and get the celery and get out. They can put anything on it.
I was just going to say, like, I think our two families are a little bit like Shelbyville and Springfield.
Yes.
You're a Clank household.
Yes.
And we're an El Dorado household.
But I would happily play El Dorado. Except that one game you set up for your birthday 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. The figure eight
map that took us 3.5 hours to get through. Yeah, I wasn't quite suicidal at the end, but it was, Clank, love it. I've loved every play I've had of it this year, and I'm looking forward to more.
Number four, pivoting to a tiny game.
Tiny game.
And it's one of my most played of the year. That's Castle Combo.
Castle Combo.
Castle Combo.
Talk about Castle
Deck
Combo.
Deck of cards, couple of coins, couple of keys, a snooty little meeple.
Yep.
And it's playing nine cards.
It's 3x3, isn't it?
3x3.
I've only played it once.
Yep. And you have
the fox looked at the table and said, how does this card work? And then beat us by 40 points.
Yeah. Yeah. Her usual MO.
Your usual MO, yeah.
But yeah, so it's basically you have two rows of three cards. You have the people in the castle and the peasants outside, and each card has a scoring condition and an income condition.
Yep.
You draft one of the cards. If you can afford to pay for it, you put it into your tableau, get its income, and at the end of the game, it will score.
Nice.
And generally, every card you're taking is going to score in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Unless you box yourself into a corner and have to flip them over and just get some money off them or something. But otherwise, quick playing, nine cards, score some points at the end. So, so smooth and quick. Yep.
I've only played the one game. I did enjoy it. There's an expansion coming out, allegedly.
Yeah, it's like 12 cards. A little foil pack, like a magic booster.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. Again, another great thing for developers and designers to do. You don't want to chuck in a whole new system, but 12 new cards.
Yep.
Easy and quick for them to ship, you know. Win-win.
Good pick. Mine is a little bit bigger than that. Mine is a 2024 game. Because of our geography, we didn't get in Australia till I want to say it was May. It was an Essen release last year, 2 years ago now, 2024, and we got it this year, and I have loved every play of that, and that's SETI. So SETI, and we've talked about SETI on the show, touched on a little bit earlier, you've got a core game, and then you've got five different alien races that come out blind. Unlike Shackleton Base, which you talked about earlier, you know what the corporations are from the onset. In SETI, you've got three alien races, and you don't know what they are until certain unlocks happen. And I won't say they meaningfully change the game, but they add another layer on how to get points that's interesting. And all five races are different. And I think it looks great on the table. I still think it's broken at two. But allegedly that gets fixed with the expansion, which I pre-ordered 6 months ago and should be here sometime between now and 2029. I love it. Love SETI. I've had great, great gameplays of it. SETI from 2024 is my number four of the year.
Yeah, it's a good game. Number three. Number three. For me, I had to put this on here because I think otherwise I'd get in trouble from Buttercup.
Oh.
And that is River Valley Glassworks.
Okay. Nice.
And I've played that a lot more than you, and you own it.
Yes. Well, you owned it. Was at your house for about 5 months straight.
And we played a lot of River Valley Glassworks. We even played it last night.
We did.
It's like almost like Baby's First Azul.
Yeah.
A little bit like with the drafting and you're putting the tiles in.
The timer on it's so tight.
Yep.
Right. 17 bits of glass and the game is over. And so you've got to be very careful not to hit that too soon.
Yeah. And you've got the lovely glass pieces, which makes it nice. And last night, Buttercup got annoyed because I was playing with the bag and all the pieces during the game. But we finally, last night, for the first time, used some of the Sundries expansions.
Yes, which are little modules. You can pick one.
I think from now on, now that we've all played it a few times, it's great.
Yeah, and I think you can use up to two of them, it says. It says use up to two of the Sundries in a game if you want to layer
different things. I didn't actually read that bit. We just used one last night. But yeah, they're all different little asymmetrical powers or little asymmetrical scoring.
Simple little things.
Simple.
I think actually they suggest it's a drafting mechanic and you play two and you draft once you play them a couple of times and you pass them around and you draft the two.
What I just like about it is, you know, you score for your two highest columns and it took me about, must have been about a minute to realize that the columns are scored differently.
Yes. Well, I remember the first game we played, we got to the end.
I'm like, oh, I've got two high columns. And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
Two high columns too, but I've got 55 points. You're like, what the? And then you look down and you go, the columns at the end are more points.
So you got to try and, you know, get the common gems towards the right. Yeah. So you can try and get those tall columns. But you also want to go up on the left so you can get more rows. More rows and great little push-pull between the columns and the rows.
You're
loved
finally
it.
Playing it right now, though. You're finally playing it correctly after last
time. Oh,
you played more than me.
Yeah.
A little rules adjustment. Not that I'm the keeper of the rules. It's very rare I find a rule. Awesome. Well, my number three is also a game that is a very recent addition to this list, as recent as what it was 3 or 4 days ago. It's been in my collection for a while. It's from 2015, and that is Food Chain Magnate.
Oh, yes.
We played that for the first time on Monday. It's Thursday. We played
I don't
Monday.
Know what day of the week it is at this
Thursday.
Time of year.
It's Thursday, Super Trooper. It's Thursday. We played that on Monday this week, 4-player. And I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. It's up there with its looks with Smartphone Inc. It's got a very Spartan sort of look, as most of the splatters do, other than Horseless Carriage. I think Horseless Carriage looks pretty good, but the rest of them, like Bus, those classic splatters like Bus and... is Roads and Boats a splatter game?
I believe so.
I think Roads and Boats, and they've got this very basic look about them, but it was fabulous. I loved every minute of it. It's one of the most, I would say, interactive games I own, just in that you can't look away from the board for more than a couple of minutes. And it's actually remarkably quick, despite, I think if you look on Board Game Geek, it says it's a 3 to 4 hour game.
Well, the game almost runs itself
after you make
the decision about which staff you're putting out. Yeah. And after that, the game, like, things are happening regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah, but that first decision, certainly in the early parts of the game, could be quite agonizing when you've only got 3 or 4 cards you can play. I had a great time with it. My number three is from 2015, Food Chain Magnate. Loved it.
I'm looking forward to playing it again. Number two, and this is very well placed, it's Lord of the Rings Duel.
Oh, okay. That's the Seven Wonders. Yep, okay.
Yep. I have... that was a present from you.
Number two.
Uh-huh. Had some good plays of it. Buttercup loves it. I think we tied the last game we played.
Yeah.
Because there's all the different win conditions, and then if none of those are met, you go to another, I think, board presence, and that was tied as well. Yep. And it's like, oh, after that, it's a tie. So she's very upset that the fate of Middle-earth hangs in the balance. Yeah.
Nice.
So I've got to play again, But I love it. Yep. I loved Seven Wonders Duel. I love it more than Seven Wonders.
Yep.
And the Lord of the Rings theme on it, there's not much change, but what has changed or been tweaked just enough, I think, makes it better than Seven Wonders Duel.
There's no area majority in Seven Wonders Duel, is there? It's just the card play.
No, the combat's like a back and forth mechanic for that. And again, another one of these, it's coming out with a little booster pack expansion, another half a dozen or dozen cards or whatever it is. Looking forward to that. Got a couple of aftermarket coins in there as well to make it nice. And even the productions on it, like the...
that little acrylic overlay of the Nazgul chasing Frodo and Sam is great.
It's great.
It is great.
It's really, really good. Yeah, loved it. And again, looking forward to more and more plays of it.
Nice.
Got to find out what happens to Middle-earth.
Yes. Well, my number two, a game was a, it was another PlayCon game this year. And I played that with Battleships and one of our regular listeners, Sonia. And I can't remember the fourth fellow's name. He was fantastic. I can't remember his name.
And it was a Bone Lachlan. Wars.
Wasn't it
Lachlan?
Could have been.
Because, yeah, you're telling me how he...
We took a break to go have dinner and I came back and I sat down and he went, these are the eight ways we're playing the game wrong. And I'm like, fantastic. Thank you for that. And they were, you know, some of them were significant. But Bone Wars is fantastic. Bone Wars takes place in the late 1800s. It's literally the social war between the two leading paleontologists of the time. And it's the production. It's one of those, I think it's one of those Game Brewer games that sent Game Brewer broke to make. It's beautiful. It's chunky. And the gameplay is great. It's meaty. It's meaty without being overwrought. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of things happening. But also it's so tactile. Like when you're collecting those acrylic bones and you've got these beautiful books you're slotting in the bookshelf and you've got your player board and you... Bone Wars. It's a 2024 game. Game Brewer, RIP. We made some great games in your time. Loved every minute of Bone Wars. And actually, I was talking to Battleships about it just the other day. It's like, oh, when are we going to play Bone Wars again? I'm like, well, when you get a day off, buddy.
Yep.
Yeah. So my number two is Bone Wars.
Yeah, looking forward to playing that one. I haven't played it, but it does look very pretty. It looks like Darwin's Journey.
It does look like Darwin's Journey. And on the table, it looks like Darwin's Journey. Look, I love Darwin's Journey. I absolutely love Darwin's Journey. I think Bone Wars, for me, just pips it out as a game. I think it just pips it out. And I can't tell you honestly whether that's because of the little books or if it's because of the game. Because
the chunkiness.
It's just got such beautiful bits that you're playing with. I can't tell you whether it's the gameplay or the production, because there's nothing wrong with the production for Darwin's Journey. I love Darwin's Journey, and it nearly made this list, but it wasn't... I don't think it was new.
We played it a lot. I don't think it was new.
That's the reason to make this list. We played it actually in 2024. So yeah, Bone Wars, 2024 game. Absolutely fantastic.
Number one. SETI.
Yay! I was like, is it going to be on his list? Is it going to be on his list? Does he not like SETI? What's going on with SETI?
Yeah. I think my love of SETI is why Shackleton Base is lower down the list.
Yeah.
Because I think they're similar while not being similar.
Sure.
Like, they're space themed with modular additions.
Yep.
But I just absolutely love the comboing in SETI.
Yes.
You have a hand of three cards. You're looking at whatever you want to do. And you're like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
I can do this.
I can.
This can go here. Then that can go there. Then that can go that.
Yeah.
And there's little endorphin hits you get.
Yes.
When you pull those combos off, it's fantastic.
Right. Well, my number one, I'll see you, SETI, and raise you a Shackleton Base.
I knew you liked it more than me. I know.
And I think the reason I like Shackleton Base, it's only three steps further up the list than SETI, I think, is because the corporations have more of an impact on how you choose to play the game.
Well, they're open from the start.
They're open from the start, and you actually have to play a certain way if you want to engage with the corporations. Usually, you actually have to adjust not just your tactics, because SETI's quite tactical, whereas Shackleton Base is a little more strategic. And I love a tactical game. It's just, for me, I think Shackleton Base, which, again, is the board is so ugly. It looks like a nothing board. You put it out, it's a big circle with sections on it, and it's not pretty. It looks like a very transactional game on the table. But the gameplay for me, that was my number one, was Shackleton Base. And yeah, I loved it.
So let me put this question to you.
Okay. Just this once.
Did you buy metal coins for Shackleton Base?
No, because I've got sci-fi coins already.
Did you buy metal coins for Shackleton Base?
No.
But did you buy metal coins for SETI?
Yes.
So SETI's your favourite game out of the two of them.
SETI's my prettier game. It's funny because in Shackleton Base, you've got all these habitats you're putting out on the board. And on Etsy, they make these lovely 3D printed domes, which are so sexy. I'm like, but I've got nowhere to put them because those are not fitting in the box.
You've got nowhere to put them?
Well, okay.
You live in a board game bunker.
True. True. I suppose Shackleton Base could have its own little box of special
elements. I can't wait to play with these domes.
Oh, fine.
And yeah, the SETI expansion really, really looking forward to
playing. I am too. It's got new Alien Races. It's got a new, like a little prelude style Terraforming Mars head start.
I didn't realize it actually takes out a whole round of the game.
It does. The round, the game is four rounds instead of five, but you get a head start. You kind of skip that.
You're going to be doing the same amount of stuff.
You're doing the same amount of stuff. Your round four will feel like your round five from a combo-tastic point of view. And it, there's a mechanic allegedly which fixes the scanning at two.
See, I've played it a few times at two. I don't think it's as broken as you think it is. Yeah.
I just find
you just have to determine, like, you have to do it, and you got to do it smartly to fill in the sectors that you need.
You do, but then those big, juicy sectors never get hit because you can't scan the ones that take six and seven.
Just play better.
Don't do it.
Get good.
Yeah, get good. All right. Well, that is the top 10. That is the unwrapping of 2025. Did you have any honorable mentions?
Oh, yeah, about another 150 games.
Well, I have three that I actually want to mention.
So, 11, 12, and 13 for you?
Nope.
No? Nope.
They're in the next 10 somewhere, but they're ones that I thought was worth mentioning because I had wonderful times with them. One was Endeavor Deep Sea.
Oh, yes, another one I haven't played.
Oh, that's right, you weren't at the table. That was Project L's Endeavor Deep Sea, I think is...
Didn't get an invite.
It's a you were playing something else. That was another Playcon game. Endeavor Deep Sea was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed Endeavor Deep Sea. I want to give an honorable mention to Vantage. I think Vantage is so different to anything else I've ever played. It's almost not a game.
An activity.
Well, it's the ultimate choose-your-own-adventure. And
who didn't love those growing up? Those choose-your-own-adventure novels.
Yeah, I had 27 of them. But the fact that I could sit here and the peanut will go down the rabbit hole for 3 hours with Vantage and she just gets sucked in. She's like, what's on this card? Oh my God, look at this. Where am I? And oh, I've seen this. I saw this. It's just so much fun. The Fox loves Vantage. I just think it's almost not a game, but I've had such great times at the table with it. And the third one is one I played at PAX again with Lou. And it is just stupid fun. It's not Muffin Time. It's not Muffin Time because that is stupid, but it's also fun. It's Galaxy Trucker.
Oh, yes.
I played Galaxy Trucker and it is just crazy, crazy good fun. Those are my three honorable mentions for 2025. And that is the other. Anything you want to close that section out with?
No, all happy with that.
Well, at that point, we're going to take a break and squeeze you for 8 cents. Listeners, thank you for your time. Your 1.2 cents goes into the pot to help me pay for hosting this beautiful podcast, so stand by. For your second course today, we're going to do top five games that we played that are actually from this year. Yes, I've got that right?
Yep, top five 2025 releases.
Yep, so we always have a gorgeous backlog of games that we either haven't played yet or want to play. Or we're playing, you know, so playing games that are in the same year as they come out, as you mentioned earlier, it's very hard for us. A lot of it's geographically related. You know, there are games that were out this year that we won't see till middle of next year. But I did play a few. So this is top five we played this year from this year's releases. You want to lead us off?
I will, with number six.
Oh, number six. All right, fair
because
enough.
Because it's Formaggio.
Oh, Formaggio.
Which
okay.
is Fromage.
Yes.
It's a standalone expansion.
Yes, they've stepped over the border to Italy.
Yes.
Taken one step over and go, now we're Italian.
It's the exact same game with four new minigames.
Yep.
And they're all interchangeable and I loved it. Played it the other couple of days ago.
Yep.
Loved it.
Fromage is a great game.
Play some cheese, turn the wheel, play some more cheese.
Yep.
Absolutely love it.
Okay.
Number six.
Okay, well then go straight into your number five. I don't have a number
Number
six
five was Ruins.
Okay, nice.
I'm Ruins. Not a trick taker. I'm not a card shedder.
Yep.
But I'm playing a lot more of them and enjoying them. And Ruins is crazy bonkers fun.
It is crazy bonkers fun. Absolutely. It's John DeClair. If you know John DeClair's games, it's card crafting.
You have a sleeve, you have a card in it, and you put clear plastic cards in that add numbers and powers and abilities.
Yep.
The cards will flip from day to night and the numbers will change. And
by the end of the game, you've got these sleeves with five things in them sometimes. It's this great big, it's the size of a credit card by the end of the game.
And I think what tipped it over for my enjoyment was I won the last game. Until then, I think the first few games I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yep.
And then, sneaking out those wins and actually getting it, understanding it, really
nice.
Helped with my enjoyment of it.
I
really loved
Ruins
it.
A lot. I can't remember what problem. Do you know why I picked up Ruins? I was ordering something from Allplay, and I needed to top up my order for shipping. And Ruins was on my list.
They gotcha.
Well, Ruins was on my wish list, but I didn't realize it was already out. And so I was scrolling through Allplay's website, and Ruins is out. Oh, that's supposed to be quite good. So I grabbed it, and I loved every play of it. It is a brain melter towards the end of the game. Yep. When you're trying to work out, you think you've picked up 3 2s, but you've actually picked up a 7 and 9 and a 43. It's great. Good pick.
But yeah, card shedding game, but the numbers change all the time.
Nice.
And you can change your own numbers during the game. And yeah, great. Loved it.
Well, my number 5 is a bonkers game that you can only win by mistake, but I have never not had an absolute blast at the table. That's Hot Streak.
Hot Streak.
Hot Streak's my number 5. It's a racing game. You've got these ridiculous mascots, sporting mascots. You can see the little googly eyes poking out of them. And everyone's around the table and you're taking bets and we're all throwing cards into this shared race deck. And once they go, they're knocking each other over. They're stomping each other. They're running off. People are screaming and cheering and slapping the table. And all the fucking fish, the stupid fish, useless to me. I've loved every minute of the table with Hot Streak. I think it's a fabulous game, and you can play it with anybody. That's the great thing.
So I think for me, Hot Streak falls into the similar category to Flip 7, where I don't think it's a good game for me,
yeah,
but it's a fun game.
Yes.
You get the right people, yeah, at the table, the kids.
Yeah. And that said, how many games of Flip 7 did you play in this year?
Oh, 50? Too many.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, Flip 7's not... Hot Streak's a game that I will suggest if we got kids around.
Yep.
Or if we got a quick half hour, everyone's had a few drinks, and it's like, oh, no one wants to learn anything too heavy.
Yeah, we just want to gamble on some mascots.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a very, very, very fun game.
It is very fun. That was my number 5, Hot Streak.
Number 4 is another bonkers game. That's Origin Story.
Oh, it's just interesting, because it's like, I really like... I won't say I'm on the fence with Origin Story. I'm definitely on the enjoyment side. But like, as you know, when I talked to Jamie Stegmaier some weeks ago, I said to him, I don't know how he took it, but I said, I think you can only win Origin Story by mistake, you know? So talk through Origin Story.
I don't think so. I think, yes, some luck of the draw, if you can get a combo of powers together. Yeah. But again, like I said, I'm not much of a trick taker, you know? What have I got? The Crew and the Lord of the Rings one. And there's bit by bit, I'm getting a bit into it.
Cat in the Box.
Yeah. And Fox in the Forest and a few others. But... Origin Story, I think it has a lot of fun in it.
It's so fun.
It is very fun
to
play. It is
so fun to play. And I love the art. The art, it's that watercolor art. I can't remember the artist's name. I'm sorry to the artist out there. It's the same artist that did Wormspan. It's the same artist that did Wormspan for Stonemaier Games. That watercolor brushstroke. The art's fabulous. It is super fun. It is a super fun game. I think it's a great pick.
I think just when you've got your own combo, you're like, oh, this is going to be a good combo. Suddenly someone else's combo just breaks your combo things change. You think, I'm going to trump you with a 12, and then next minute someone wins with a 1 because they are invisible and the lowest thing wins or something. And it works.
It does.
It works.
It does work.
And I think every time we've gone, oh, there's a bit of an edge case, you reread it and go, no, it's not an edge case.
It's not. It's actually quite clear.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited there's an expansion coming. I think the expansion has more... like finishing cards, the superhero cards. I think there's 5 more sets of those, and there's more superpowers and more events coming.
Again, you don't want more mechanics in that. No. Like you just want more
interplay. So again, smart. It's probably going to be a pack of 20 cards that comes out, slips in the box.
Easy shipping.
My number 4. I've only played once. I asked you to bring it yesterday, and you
completely forgot.
And actually, we played it the same day we played Donuts.
Yep.
And that is Iliad. Iliad by Ryder Knizia. I grew up playing chess. I played a lot of chess growing up. Now, Iliad is not chess. For those of you that are hearing chess and going, throwing up in your mouth.
It looks like it. The board looks like it.
It is not. Now, you've played more Iliad than I. So do you want to talk through the gameplay?
Later.
Okay. Oh, later.
Hashtag spoiler alert.
Iliad was my number 4. I love it. I think it's fantastic. When it hit Kickstarter, I nearly backed Iliad and Ikor for your birthday because you're a Knizia fangirl. And I thought, well, Ikor's getting some 50-50 reviews. And I looked at it and I went, I won't take a chance. But Iliad, I think it's great. And I would not just happily play it, I will request that one because it may be pipping out Watergate as my favorite 2-player with a few more plays. We haven't
played that in so long. Need to get that back.
Yes, we do. Watergate's a great game. Anyway, on to you for number 3.
Number 3. This is my pick for a game that's super fun.
Yes.
But also super nasty.
Okay.
And there were a lot of choice words said while playing this game.
Choice words.
One of our non-gaming friends played it with us.
Non-gaming friends. I was going to say, is it Far Away?
No, it's Tacta.
Oh, Tacta! Tacta's not even a game, but yes.
It was so much fun. Like, it is fun. When I was just talking about games that aren't necessarily good, but fun, this is almost in there. Like, it's...
Yeah.
What did you call it? 52 Pick Up the Game?
Yeah, 52 Pick Up the Game was swearing.
So Tacta, I'd never heard of it. Every now and then, Project L says to us, oh,
I'm going to pick up this game called Herka Flurka 6.
Yeah, and I'm like, you're making up games, Project L. Like, I've never heard anything. And she's so happy. Like, I'm picking up Tacta. I'm like, cool. Like, what is Tacta?
Yeah.
And then she brings these games whenever we're at Games Days. And you're like, okay. And she shows you Tacta, which is a deck of cards with all these weird shapes with a domino-esque dots on them.
Yeah.
And it's literally, you play a card, there's a cutout, which might match another card on you, and you play it over someone else's coloured card.
Yeah.
And whoever has the most dots showing at the end wins.
Yeah.
And you're covering up people's dots, and you're blocking off places for people to put big dots.
It is brutal.
Swearing and yelling. Because
you think you've got something, and then three turns later, it's gone.
And the best bit is, the edge of your table is the edge of where you can play cards.
And if 1 mil of your card's poking off the edge of the table, you can't play it.
And we're playing it at with the board game barbecue day at Castle Hill. And I was playing it with Project L, the cracker, and the little spawn of Project L on the cracker. And we're playing cards out. And I think the little spawn has put a card out. And he's gone, oh, does this fit off? And the cracker's just got a board game. The box lid just slid it along the edge of the table until it hit his card. He went, no. It's caused some. It had some good fun moments.
Yeah. Tacta. It was a good game.
We're just playing it with Sarah Lee, who doesn't really like playing games with us, but she was into it.
And the competitiveness that were coming out of her.
Yeah, I think she was going after you.
She was.
So every time you play something that covered something up, either of hers or covered up
or blocked something she was aiming for. Yes, I got an earful.
Yeah. So Tacta, stupid game, so much fun.
Nice. Well, I don't have any stupid games in my top three. I've got all big chonky games in my top three. But my number three is a game that we have played a number of times.
Yep.
And I think it is absolutely spectacular. That's Galactic Cruise. So Galactic Cruise is the Lacerda for non-Lacerda players. The production quality is 93 out of 10. It's so smooth. It looks great on the table. It's remarkably easy to learn and teach because all of the actions you take make sense. And I think for a first game from a design team, I think it's an absolute celebration. Galactic Cruise, I can't say enough nice things about it.
It's a good game.
It's a good game.
Number two.
Yes.
Iliad.
And number two is Iliad. All right. Number two. That's really high up there. Number two.
It is up there with one of my favorite two-player games.
Yeah.
So I played it, Voldemort bought it for me for my birthday, and I played it with Dustin a couple of days after that. And like, this is really good. Really, really good. Really tight. And then I played it with you.
Yeah.
And then the other day, I got to play it with Voldemort. And then he and Dustin played it together. And what I like about it, and I didn't think you would like it as much as you did, because it gave me Calico vibes, where you play a few tiles, and then 5 turns later, the map is half the size, and your placement options are so limited.
They are.
And I think the last few turns almost play themselves out
when it
gets to like 2 or 3.
The main difference between this and Calico, though, is your tiles have power.
Yes.
Right? Your tiles
and you can move things around
and... And I think part of why Calico hurts my brain is it feels like a TV screen that's on the fritz. Like all the patterns on those tiles, I think it just hurts my face.
I just thought the shrinking boundaries might.
No, it's not the shrinking boundaries so much as it's the, you've got to have the 3 pinks, but the 7 stripes and I just trying to grok the board, I think, is what hurts my face. It's not the shrinking board.
The more times I've played it and you realize, there is a bit more strategy than you think, like trying to block off your own big tiles so that they can't get moved out.
Yeah.
And just things like that. Yeah. Absolutely love it.
It's a deep strategy, great tactics. It's unplayable though, Super Trooper, because there are some wooden pieces and you don't have them.
But I mean, like the cardboard is nice and chonky, but they don't weigh down the cloth mat that comes in it, so it gets a bit bubbly and everything. But absolutely great name. I think it's one of Ron Akinsia's finest recent works.
I really like it. It's really good. A lot. My number two is another recent play, recent delivery. It is a Lacerda. That is Speakeasy.
Speakeasy.
Now, I've only played it solo, right? Full disclosure, I've only played it solo. I do play a lot of solo games. I like playing with myself. It's nice. You know, it's... And the reason I like playing a lot of solo games is I can get a little dustiny sometimes, and I don't have to... I don't have to worry about it, right? But Speakeasy, I think, may be one of his very best. Not just from the theme, but from the gameplay. It's almost like a Lacerda that's half a step towards Galactic Cruise with gameplay, right? In that the actions make sense. Everything you're doing makes sense. You're not getting a voucher to get a car part, to exchange it at the car part center, to then maybe slot it into... There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. I love a Lacerda. Speakeasy is not... But it's not just fantastic. It's fucking gorgeous. Like Scarface, you know, even Griffin, when they do Lacerda games... It's gorgeous. It is the fattest...
I was about to say, it's the biggest box. I can see it right there behind you. It's the
fattest Lacerda box. Yeah. And of course, the player board's great. And the InO2 art in it is absolutely spectacular. I can't wait to play it at 3. I don't know that I would play it at 4 because it's a Lacerda. And Lacerda's... I think the sweet spot for Lacerda's is always 3. I think 4 makes it a little bit just too long a game. But yeah, Speakeasy is my number 2. Love it.
So number 1, you've already mentioned it, Galactic Cruise.
Oh, it's your number 1.
Number 1.
I'm delighted to hear it, right? Because it's, number 1 game of the year, Galactic Cruise.
Yeah.
I think it deserves it. The only reason it's not my number 1 is that I have other games that are just my number 1.
I know what your number 1 is, and I thought it was going to be between Galactic Cruise and...
And Speakeasy?
No, and the other game, which you're about to say is your number 1.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, Galactic Cruise, what I love about it is it's... A two-phase game.
Yeah.
There's before the first launch of a cruise ship.
Yes.
And after the first launch of a cruise ship.
Because it becomes a race game.
It sets a timer.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't necessarily set a timer, but the way the goals are scored.
Yes.
You get them from running the cruises, most of them.
Yes.
And so everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, I'm getting my fuel, and I'm getting my oxygen and some food. And then suddenly someone launches a cruise ship and everyone's like, shit.
It is like the space race.
It's on.
You gotta try and space race all of a sudden.
Launching those cruises.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I think the cards are great because you're always like, oh, I can't do this. Oh, but this card is suddenly it's a fuel. I can launch a rocket ship, and just get it out.
You can dump your agenda cards for resources.
Nice. I think the cards are great. I'm looking forward to playing with some of the little expansions.
Yeah, the one that I'm looking forward to.
Advanced techs maybe or something.
Yeah, the advanced techs up the top. Because they've got a really interesting mechanic that every time they're pumped, they get a little more powerful. And so I'm looking forward to playing again. And I know Project L loves Galactic Cruise. I know the Cracker will play.
Because Project L will be playing. Because
Project L says, please sit down and play Galactic Cruise, motherfucker. And we all need a partner who will do that without killing us in our sleep. But yeah, I think Galactic Cruise, I'm delighted to hear. My number one, it just couldn't be touched.
Before you get to number one, I was going to say, last thing about Galactic Cruise, I hope... that the designers can follow it up with a good game.
Well, that's interesting. It's
first time designers, such a good game. They've got Eno tool art. They've got the good production values. I hope their next game's good and they're not just a one-hit wonder. The
next game is totally different. It's some... I may get this wrong. Kins and Keys, my apologies, because you did announce it quite some time ago. Not that you're going to be listening, but anyone who is listening who might want to correct me on it, I'm announcing here that I probably have this a little bit wrong. But from memory, it's like an indigenous themed game and it's very different to this. I wish I could remember the title. But it's wildly different to this. Like just chalk and cheese. Like it's not a trick taking game, but it is just a wildly different look, wildly different in feel. And I'm looking forward to seeing what comes. Because for a first game...
Oh, they hit it out of the park.
They absolutely... It's an absolute home run. My number one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what that is? You want to say it?
Is it Elder Scrolls?
Is Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. Yeah, Elder Scrolls. I mean, not only does it tick that Elder Scrolls box, because I've been playing Elder Scrolls since... I didn't play 1 and 2, but Morrowind. I put 17 trillion hours into Morrowind, and then Oblivion, and then Skyrim. And I will still go back and play Skyrim. I'm still playing the Oblivion remaster. I love the world. I love the lore. I love watching videos of... I watched a video just yesterday of some motherfucker who built a cheese wall, like a Donald Trump cheese wall with all the... collected all the cheeses. And he was lovingly placing cheese, you know, on the wall. And he put this cheese up and the whole wall fell down because...
Too much cheese.
He was narrating his building. He goes, and the interesting thing about cheese is the structural integrity of cheese is... And the whole thing comes down and goes, inconsistent. And so this whole wall came down, and like the mania around it.
Now, but tell us about the game.
Now, okay, fine. Let's do that. So, Betrayal of the Second Eras by Chip Theory, who I happen to really love their games, largely because they're very well tuned for solo play. They're really puzzly, they're meaty games, lots of decision space. It's basically Too Many Bones 2.0, and anyone who has been playing Too Many Bones knows all about Elder Scrolls, but it's one game of Elder Scrolls is basically 3-4 hour sessions. And that's where I suppose the challenge of getting it to the table lies, but why it's great for solo. I mean, not only do I have a place where I can leave stuff set up, but the save system in Elder Scrolls is spectacular. They've got these lovely little save trays that basically clam around, because you've got a neoprene mat that's your player board with all of your little pegs for everything, chips that slot into it, dice that slot into it, and this little clamshell literally clips around your whole player board and locks it away untouched for the next play. Very clever. It's a bear to set up, but once you set it up, you know, you've got even that feel of, you know, the old Elder Scrolls side quest. I'm trying to get something done, but I keep getting hit with these fucking side quests. What do you mean? Another side quest? I've got 99 side quests. I've got another side quest? And they're great. The gameplay is great. The design is spectacular. The art, every piece of art has been approved by Bethesda ZeniMax. It feels like it's like an Elder Scrolls game. There's more Elder Scrolls coming next year with its own version of the Too Many Bones chest.
And cheese.
And cheese. And a chef class. There's a chef class that's coming out next year. And I'll tell you what, unlike most big boxes, the chests that Chip Theory make it easier to table the game, not harder. Because I got the Cloudspire chest delivered the other day. It's got 12 boxes of content in it, and I can get at it in minutes rather than having to open all these boxes, because they're all in drawers. It's actually those little chests they make, they're expensive, but they make the game easier to table.
You blew Buttercup's mind when you showed her that the chest down there.
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
The trove, that's with the magnet. Chest with the magnet. Well, this one has a hummingbird magnet. The Harbinger chest is a hummingbird magnet. So Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, it is the kind of game that will never ever leave my collection, because it's not only is a great game, it's near and dear to my heart. And that's the five from the year. Good list.
Good list.
Good list. All right. So on to next section.
A little bit of a downer.
Yeah.
Games we're happy not to play again.
Games we're happy. Now, I started off with games we hated, and Super Trooper said, let's just change the language. Let's make it a little softer, gentlemen. That's fair.
Because they're not necessarily hate.
They're not necessarily hate. Actually, there's a game on here I hated. There's a game on here I did not enjoy. And there's a game on here that I did not enjoy, but it's conditional. So I have three on my list.
I've got two.
All right. Well,
you start with number three.
All right. So my first one is Ada's Dream of More Than Three Players.
Yes, that was a very long game that didn't need to be that long.
We played Ada's Dream, which I think is actually probably a really good game. We played it at four players, and I think it's a good game. I think there's got some good stuff in it. I think the mechanics are interesting. I think the rondel is interesting. I think the dice play is interesting. You're not rolling dice, but the way you manipulate the dice to get your turns. I think it's an interesting game. But at four players, I was ready to end it all after.
I'd play it at three again.
Yeah, but I would not.
No questions asked.
So mine is Ada's Dream at four players. No, thank you.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. So number two for me is a game that I think is very interesting. I'm happy I've played it. I never want to play it again, but I keep telling everyone else to play it once.
Yes.
And that's Arapa Mines.
Okay. Because so Voldemort brought this to Voldemort your place.
Voldemort loves it. He loves these deduction games. He loves deduction games. And I played it with him down at his place a couple of months ago. And it blew my mind. And I said, thank you for showing this to me. Please find someone else to play it with again. And then he brought it the other day. And he got a couple of victims in.
He did.
He hooked a couple of new cult members into it.
I would have played it if I'd had time. Yeah.
I think you should play it. Whether you enjoy it, I think you'll enjoy playing it and then go, thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Please find. It's like The Ring. You've got to watch the movie and then pass it on.
Oh yes.
you know, 7 days. Someone else has to play it. Yeah, it's basically a gamer's version of Battleship.
Right.
You have a little battleship type thing. You put different colored shapes like triangles, squares, diamonds, or whatever and they're all different color. And then you say, okay. Then your opponent does the same thing behind a screen, and you say, okay, I'm going to shoot a white laser out from row K. And then your opponent says, okay, it comes out at row 5 and it's now blue. Like, okay, so the white laser has bumped off a blue object. But which object? They always bounce at, 90 degrees. But it might have bounced off 3 objects to come out of that thing. And so it's deduction. And bit by bit, you got to eliminate, or you got to try and see what their layout is.
Are you like drawing a diagram on your side?
Yeah,
table?
So you've got a bit of paper. You're right. Trying to draw things with all your guesses.
Right.
And then you've got to guess the color, shape, and position
yep.
of the little pieces that your opponent has. Yep. And it's very interesting. I think everyone should give it a go
yep.
and decide whether they like that style of game. If you do, I think it'll be fantastic.
Yep.
Not for me.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Because that sounds like up there with like Turing Machine for me.
Yes.
Which I played 15 minutes of at PAX 2 years ago and stood up and said, thank you for your time, but I will never need to sit down at a Turing Machine table again. But the guy sitting next to me, he was like 65 and he was a punch card programmer in the 60s. He's like, I fucking love this game. Give me 3 copies. I know people. I'm like, okay, bro. It's all you can have my copy, right? Like, it's just, yeah. Well, I'll play it once. My game. This is my never, ever, ever, ever again. We didn't play it. I played it at PAX.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new game that's coming out by, who does Dice Throne?
Oh, yeah. That company.
That company.
Yeah.
They've got
Roxley Games.
Does Roxley do Dice Throne?
Yes.
Because Jesus Christ, Roxley, you make some good games, but this is just hot trash. This is Slam Throne, which is Pog 2026. And people are lining up for this, and you get a blind bag. You buy a bag, and you don't know what's in it, and it's like it's a character, and it's a bunch of chips, and you're basically, it's Pog. Now, if you're not...
Are they good chips?
They're fine. No, they're like thick laminated card. Right? They're like thick laminated card that you stack up and you got a heavy chip that you got to try and knock. It's just, it's like, I can see smashed shit in people's houses because this, you got to, oh my God. It was like, I played it for 15 minutes because I got a stamp towards your little rewards at PAX. And that's, what did I get for free? I got a free something. You always get free shit at PAX when you get enough stamps. I can't remember what I got this year. I got sea salt and paper for free. I needed 20 stamps to get sea salt and paper, which is a fun little game. But I played this for 15 minutes, and after a minute and a half, I wanted to end it. I'm like, this is what we played in 1985 at the playground at recess at school, and it was a shit game then. So they've invested squillions in these.
What, like, are you playing, Jacks or Ball in the Cup or something? Or?
Playing, yeah, no, yeah. It's, Slam Throne is hot garbage. And for those of you that love Slam Throne, I'm not having to go at you.
Well,
but
you
I'm,
are.
But I'm having a go at you. Right? Like, oh, sort your life choices out.
Number one for me, I played this up at CoastCon with Battleships when you guys weren't there. That's Mad Carla.
Oh, Mad Carla. Okay, yeah. Which is the Alice in Wonderland. It's Druid City. It's yeah. their
it's not the Wonderland War. It's not the Wonderland's War duel.
No, it's not.
It's a two-player game yeah. in that universe. So, yeah. you know, like companies can do, they can double up on the art and, yeah. you know, save all that. And it's a... Mancala game, so you're going around moving the lovely madness shards yeah. around the circle of bowls, doing bits and pieces. And I don't know whether it was just the two characters that we had, but it's also part of like built into the game, and it does what I hate in a dueling game, where the aim of the game is to kill your opponent, and they start with, I say, 20 health or something like that, and there's healing.
Yep.
And so, oh, I've got you down to 15, and then they just go back up to 19.
Sure.
And okay, so next turn you get them down to 13, and then they go back up to 18.
So it just makes the game unnecessarily long.
It just dragged on and on. Yeah. And in a realm of such good two-player games,
yep.
see a Mad Carla,
yep.
never again.
Mm. You probably guessed my number one in this category.
What was this one out of the three you said?
I will play it again. It's not never again. It's I'd prefer not to. It's a trick taker with... cats. Mafia.
Oh, Pumafiosi.
Yes. No, thank you.
Oh,
I
really?
Love a trick taker. I grew up playing Bridge and Hearts and all this stuff. And I love a trick taker. But this whole come in second nonsense, I just, maybe it's just because I couldn't get my head around it. Maybe it needs more plays. To be honest, Root was no thank you after I played Root the first time. I did not have a fun time with Puma.
I played it with Battleships and Mrs. Battleships.
Yeah.
And they went out and bought it.
Did they?
Loved it.
I knew there was something wrong with them.
I really enjoy it. It's like a 10-minute game. Yeah. Good fun.
Look, as I said, it's not a never again. Yeah. It's I'd rather play Cat in the Box.
Oh, completely different game.
Yeah, but it's a trick taker.
Well, like comparing that they're both trick takers is like saying...
But it's a trick taker with wild twists in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather play Cat in the Box. Puma Fantasy, it's fine.
It's like comparing Tiny Epic Dungeons and Aeon Trespass Odyssey.
Just totally the same game. Totally the same game. You're rolling dice. That's it. That's a small list.
That's our little negative section. Little
negatives. And of course, if you're still hungry, there's always room for more games in case you haven't had enough. There were a ton of games that came out in 2025, you know, and as we've spoken about a couple of times, we don't always get them here on our fair shores for whatever reason. So these are the games that we would have really loved to have played in 2025, but for whatever reason, whether they didn't quite hit our shores or no one bought a copy or... Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah, I've only got one. It's the game we missed.
Oh, yes.
And that's Vantage.
Okay. So you didn't get to play it. Correct. It's sitting right there on the shelf.
I haven't got to play it.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, you're going away for
a
little bit of time.
I am going away for 10 days.
School holidays. I've got January. A 11-year-old daughter who might enjoy something.
I reckon she would, and Buttercup would like it too. Yeah. He said it's choose your own adventure. It's super breezy. So
I think Vantage might be stolen from the bunker in a couple of weeks.
Easy peasy. I have two. Mm-hmm. One was absolutely meant to deliver in November. It's supposed to have delivered. It's a game that I'm really dying to play, and that's Old King's Crown. And Old King's Crown was a crowdfunded game. I didn't crowdfund it, but I managed to snag an aftermarket copy from Dean at Advent Games. It's just not there. It's not there yet, but I'm very much looking forward to playing that one.
I didn't know you'd pre-order this.
I pre-ordered it from Dean 4 months ago, and it was supposed to get to him in November, and I'm assuming something's been held up. And the other one is the spiritual successor to Revive, which I have picked up. That's Recall.
There it is.
Recall sitting right there.
Staring at me.
Staring at you with... Like Revive, I sense it's a nonsensical cover that has nothing to do with the game whatsoever, but it looks fantastic, and although I've only played Revive about 5 or 6 times, it would be in my top 20, I would think.
It's up there for games with the weirdest theme.
It is a weird theme.
What are the crystal skulls?
What are they? Who knows? That's it. I would have loved to have played Orloi, but we had no chance. Orloi's like Nucleum. It was an SM release. We'll see that in 2029. Some nonsense like that.
That's just the game I pronounce differently every time I say it, just to annoy you.
Yeah, look.
Orlog.
I've got 3 daughters. You got nothing. 6, 7. You want to be annoying? And then our next bit for this one. Most anticipated for 2026. The games you're looking forward to receiving and playing the most for the coming 364 days. How many have you got on this list?
5.
I've got 5 as well.
It was the hardest list. I thought we were doing 5 because it's the hardest list I had to do.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not looking forward to anything?
Nope. I'm looking forward to all the games we've already got.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not as future focused as you are. You haven't. I think because I'm that few years ahead of you into the hobby.
Sure.
I've got my collection to where I kind of want it to be.
Yeah.
And so I get all of my new release plays through yourself and Project L.
Sure.
I'm very happy with my
list of 5, though. I've got some really good games. And they are all games. Anyway, you go first then.
Number 5. And these are all ones that are going to be arriving.
So you've ordered them or you've backed them or somebody's backed them.
Someone has.
Okay, right.
That's number 5 is Container.
Okay, nice.
So you talked about Food Chain Magnate earlier. Yep. I think it's going to be same but different.
Yeah.
Nice, closed economy,
yep.
Tight, nasty game.
Spoiler alert, my number 5 is Container. Container, not only does it look... you've got that Food Chain Magnate vibes without having that splotter... Paint yourself in a corner on turn 1 and then just sit back and you can fist yourself for the rest of the game. It's due in August. Looks great. It's top shelf production. It's got little metal shipping containers. It looks fabulous. Not much of a table presence. Like, as in, the boards are quite tight. There's not a lot going on the table, but it looks fabulous. My number 5 is also Container.
Play that in Food Chain Magnate back to back.
At the same table, depending on who we're with. Yeah. I've got a mix of crowdfunded and retail games on mine.
Number four is Cascadia Alpine Lakes.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's interesting. It looks interesting because it goes up now, 3D. So talk about Cascadia Alpine Lakes.
They fly now. I'm just thinking of that bad Star Wars movie.
They fly now.
They fly now. They go up now. It's dual hexagons rather than single hexagons.
That's right.
Replacement.
That's right.
Cascadia, one of Buttercup's favourite games.
Yep.
We don't own it. You own Cascadia.
Yes.
And I think Dustin owns it.
Yeah.
Project L.
But it was one of your favorite games before Harmonies came out.
Correct. Harmonies has killed... Well, not killed it for me. I'll play
just
them both.
It out. Yeah.
But yeah, Harmonies is my favorite of the two. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Supposed to be
when
June next
do?
Year. Sometime next year.
Sometime. Yep.
And I think even like... It'll be here next year. It'll be a huge retail hit.
Yeah.
And like it'll be here soon. Yeah, looking forward to it. That way I'll have my own version of Cascadia.
Nice. Well, my number five is a game we've just mentioned. Fingers crossed. That's Orloi. Orloi, the astronomical clock. The Prague astronomical clock.
Orloi.
It looks gorgeous. The gameplay looks interesting. You've got a big wheel in the center like Zolkin, but it's got this asymmetrical spin because of the way the clock works.
Like SETI.
Yes. But it's like a wheel within a wheel, and they're different shapes. And so it's got the way the rondelle works is harder to predict. You can, but it's one of those things that it just looks fabulous.
So I thought the only wheels you like were wheels of cheese.
I do like wheels of cheese. That's why I like fromage and formaggio. So Orloi, hopefully it comes out this year. I think it looks great.
Number three for me, I think it'll be Touch and Go. It says it's a 2026 game on Board Game Geek, which is where I use as my reference point for things. Sins of Heracles.
Sins of Heracles. Yeah, okay. So we pulled the trigger on Sins of Heracles as a joint purchase just 3 days ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
4 days ago, we decided we'd go halves on it, which is still a woefully large amount of money for a board game. But yeah, we're about to finish cycle two of Aeon Trespass.
I think we're one big day, games day,
I think
of
one big,
finishing
like,
cycle 10,
12 two. Hour day. Yeah.
And then I reckon we'll probably finish cycle three before
Sins of Heracles arrives.
Yeah. And then might be able to get into playing that before we do cycles four and five of base ATO.
Nice. Well, my number three is a retail game. It's a dual game, and it looks spectacular. And that's Furnace Duel.
Oh, yes, yes.
So Furnace Duel has similar mechanics to Furnace, but on the game board, you've got this little brass Birmingham-style board that you are traveling up along train routes as part of your turn. And I might get this wrong, but basically if you lose a bid, you get to travel up a train line and there are bennies up on the train line. And it looks like one of those games where you see a dual game, you go, do we really need it? It's different enough that it's not a totally different game because you've still got that bidding mechanic with your discs for the cards you want and to run your engine. But the offset is you've got this one little layer that's not brain burny, but it's like I might want to actually lose that one on purpose because
that's what I love about Furnace, where when you win an auction, you get upset. Like, why didn't someone win it from me? I wanted the resources.
But you want to lose even more in Furnace Duel for some of these because you get the bennies up on the train line. It looks great. It's a small box. It's probably going to be $35. And I think the Fox will I think it's one of those, the Fox like Orbit. She loved Orbit. I think it's the kind of thing that she will absolutely eat up.
Oh, she loves industrial era coal and steel games. One of her favorite themes.
Pittsburgh. We'll get that one to the table. Go, here you go, Foxy. Let's see what you can do with that. You know what she'll do? She'll look at it and go, how does this card work? And then she'll win by 100 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, again, through the nature of time, you may or may not have heard this one already. DC United.
Oh, yes.
So I had it on my, spoilers. It's on my...
Token Aspirations.
Yeah, Games I Wish Santa Will Bring Me.
Yes.
Again, supposed to be due 2026. I'm just hoping it delivers.
Yeah.
I am anticipating playing it. I really want to play it. Yeah, I love the United system.
I can't remember which one you prefer. Do you prefer United or Champions?
United. It's easier to play. Champions is a lot more of a game.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
Come on, Simon, you can do it.
It'll arrive.
I think so too. I think we're too far down the track on that one for it to not get to the end. My number two is another crowdfunding one. It's and I think I just love the way the gameplay. I mean, it looks beautiful, but the gameplay looks super interesting. That's Trismegistus. That's it's not so much a reprint, but it's almost Trismegistus 2.0. They did crowdfunding last year. I mean, I've got some great games coming this year that I'm looking forward to. You know, Revenant, which is the Voidfall side cousin, and some good stuff. But Trismegistus, I just think it's the kind of game, it's truly midweight. You can get it to the table. You're not setting down for 3.5 hours. It's really beautiful to look at. And I think the gameplay looks smooth and looks, I mean, I've seen some videos. Very much looking forward to that. It's supposed to deliver in May. I think it's a board and dice one from memory. They're usually pretty good on time. So Trismegistus is my number two.
Number one, Arkham Horror the Card Game, second edition.
Oh, you're going to get second edition?
It's not second edition. It's not a second edition. So everything I have is all still compatible.
Yes.
But they're almost starting again.
Right.
So same rules and everything, but they're tweaking things and reprinting cards and tweaking cards. It's a whole new campaign. And then this will be the baseline going forward.
So will you use second edition to replay your old campaigns that you've got?
So everything...
They're not compatible.
No. Or the player cards are.
Yep.
But what they're doing, and they're doing it with Marvel Champions as well now, because they've been out for so long, there's such a large card pool, they're not thinking of those cards when they design future cards. Sure.
So there could be some broken
correct.
Issues.
They'll work.
Just.
Well, yeah. Not even not just. Like,
it's like Magic the Gathering. They have so many cards now.
So going forward, this is what they're designing from.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so everything else will still work, and you can still play the other campaigns. You can use the new player cards and the old campaigns, and you can play the new campaigns with the old player cards. But going forward, new design.
Is there a plan to re-release the original campaigns in the new format? Or
nope.
So it's all new stuff. It'd be new campaigns. Well, that's smart.
Yep. And if you don't have it, it's going to go out of print. All the old stuff. And I think that's going to be a shame. I can understand the player cards going out as they bring in new player
stuff
cards.
Stuff like the Dunwich Legacy, which is really classic.
The actual campaigns will be gone. Yeah. Whether they come back in some way, shape, or form, who knows? But at the moment, no plans for them.
Well, my number one is a big game. It's delivering in two waves this year. It's one that I am exceedingly excited for. It's an Awakened Realms monster. And it's one that I am quietly confident that the Peanut will play, because it's basically D&D that's not D&D, and that's Lands of Evershade. Lands of Evershade is delivering this year. It's delivering in two waves. So you're going to get the core game and all the quality of life enhancements that, you know, Awakened Realms does. And then you've got the other campaign expansions that come later. And what I like about Lands of Evershade is, like D&D, you're going to be able to get through some scenarios. Allegedly, everything has a non-combat solution.
Okay.
So you're playing Taint of Grail right now, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, so in Taint of Grail, even some of your boss battles can be done non-combat.
Yep.
You can, you know, diplomacy your way through them.
Which is almost just a combat.
It is. But it's
the same mechanic, just with different
sets
of cards.
Same mechanic, different cards, different dialogue, different storyline.
Oh yeah, different outcomes.
Different outcome, different storyline. And I think, you know, playing something with these, you know, ghastly miniatures, when you're trying to talk them down off the ledge, the Peanut loves D&D. Like, she's only played a couple of one shots. She's really enjoyed it. It looks immersive. It looks gorgeous. And I like the other one. Earthborn Rangers, where I'm going to get the Peanut into Earthborn Rangers. That's my plan for January, is to get her into Earthborn Rangers, which is a deck builder and has some really fantastic stuff in it. I'm really looking forward to Lands of Evershade. I've got some really big games coming next year. That's probably one of my, it's my number one most anticipated for next year, because I just think it's going to be so, so good. Could be shit when it gets here. Never know. Awakened Realms doesn't tend to do disappointment much.
They'll all be fun and playable.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, so that's my number one. Most anticipated 2026. Moving on for our 2025 unwrapping, it's favorite table moments.
Favorite gaming moments.
Favorite gaming moments of the year. And yeah. I'll be shocked if some of these don't overlap.
I'm assuming they're going to be crossovers.
So you pick one, then I'll pick one. I'll put a line through.
So I have here, it was one of our battles in ATO.
Uh-huh.
It was versus a Cyclonus, which is one of the Cycle 2 monsters. And it was one of the early ones, level one or a level two, and we were getting our ass handed to us.
Yes.
And we summoned
two gods
in one battle.
In one battle. Yes.
And so for those of you who don't know ATO, when you die, except you can roll a dice, a D10. If you roll a 10, you can become a god.
You can become a god for
two turns.
Yes.
And then you come back to life and they are really good, but then after two turns they go away, but you are alive.
Yes.
And yeah, so we did that.
But we were on the verge of death. Deluxe. And then we were...
So two of our people died, and then the 10% chance... came back as gods.
Nice. I didn't have that on my list. I forgot about it until you mentioned it.
And we were just... I just remember we were just about to die, and then two gods, one game. Like, the odds are really low. Like, barely ever get those gods out. And when you do...
They're so... You want those rolls? You want those rolls?
And having two in one game.
Yeah. Two in one. Not one game. Two in one battle.
In one battle,
Well, one of my favorites was the Sulkin, I have a plan moment. We played Project on the Cracker.
That's very high up there on my list.
We played Zolkin and the Cracker. He took his first move, his first two moves, and they're cracking moves. And Project Zolkin goes, wow, what a great start. And it was all downhill from there. And then his second last turn, you know, we're all trying to go, hey, well, you could do this, you could do this. And he just put his hand up. He went, I have a plan.
Yeah, stop.
Stop, I have a plan. And he made the craziest, wildest move. Either he had a plan and it wasn't a plan, or spoiler, he did not have a plan and ended up the game on -3. But that moment where he put his hand up, I have a plan.
I just pictured Ron Howard in Arrested Development, the narrator. He did not have a plan.
That's one of my favorite moments of the year. It was so, so good.
I think my favorite moment about that game is he scored negative points at the
end. Yes, -3.
And we had to look it up. And in the rule book, it says you can go negative.
Yes. So he finished the game on -3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did so gracefully.
He did so with such grace and such decorum, with a smile on his face, and we laughed. And it was one of my favorite gaming moments of the year. Yep. Sulkin, I have a plan.
Another one for me was a game of Quest for El Dorado. I was playing with Buttercup and the Bubble.
Yep.
And I took a photo of it and I sent it to everyone. I said, oh, it's going to be a tight finish between myself and the Bubble. We had the white meeple and the blue meeple, and we were both like 3 or 4 hexes from the end.
Yep.
And then Buttercup won.
And then Buttercup won.
Yeah, got to her. We're like, ah, oh, she's not in this game. It's going to be between us. And then she drew, like, she'd purchased the draw 3 and then trash it cards. And she'd played, drew 2 of them in her hand and had a hand of, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 cards.
And just
went, what? See ya! And just went straight past the both of us. And yeah, and won. Got to the finish line and won.
Nice. I have 3, and I'll be shocked if at least one of them isn't on your list. So I'm going to go with one that I don't think is on your list, perhaps.
Yep.
On your birthday,
mm-hmm.
we play Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
The last 2 rounds of that game are some of my favorite moments ever, where you had gone, I am a Cylon, and announced yourself.
Yep.
And I thought, ooh, we could win this, because I was also a Cylon. And it came back round where you had to zip off to the star base, and I'm like, well, fuck it. And I'm also a Cylon. And then I misunderstood how I was going to play a card. And I couldn't. Anyway, I thought we were one turn away from taking it away from the humans. That was 3 hours of absolute ups and downs. But the last 2 turns of that game were so... People are on the table going, what? It was so good.
My gaming moment from that game was... When I had a plan.
Yes.
Oh, I had a plan. And it was going to be a great plan. I was an unrevealed Cylon.
Yeah.
No one knew I was a Cylon. And Buttercup she was playing one of the Boltars where you could steal the tokens that you use for your one-off special power.
Yes.
And she stole mine.
Yes.
And I needed that token to do whatever I was going to do. I was going to lower everyone's morale or tank a roll. I was going to do something phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then I was just going to reveal myself after that, and it was going to be great, and that got taken away from me.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was even doing it because she thought I was a Cylon. She's like, oh, I'm going to collect all these.
Yes.
And then do something with them. And then,
It was a great game, that one.
Yeah.
It was a great game. So that's one of mine. Back to you.
Playing with the giant Cthulhu for Cthulhu Death May Die.
That was good. That was so good. Yeah. It's like 3 feet tall or whatever, that giant Cthulhu. Coop's got that, and it's lovingly painted.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Sits in the middle. You can't even see the people you're playing with. It sits in the middle of the table. That was fantastic.
And I think it's a shame that there's only the one scenario
that you play with.
You play with it.
It does seem a shame.
It'd be good if there was a few more things.
But isn't he getting a Godzilla soon? That is
again same on. Oh no! Someone bought that.
Someone has bought that.
Yeah, but yeah, it'll be really fun. So that'll be the next year's one when we play Cthulhu versus Godzilla. But no, that was just like, it's again, whether the scenario is good or not, but just playing with that giant mini, the Maxiture.
The scenario was fine, and it was fun. We ended up winning on like the last possible chance we could, which is the only way you win Cthulhu Death May Die.
Yeah.
This is a big one. Well, not a big one. This is a great moment in gaming. This is the Clank Legacy game.
Which one?
where the Cracker was making the exit. Game one. And he was stopping at the market, and he said, oh, I'm going to buy a pickaxe. And when you go to
I think it was me. I think I take full responsibility.
It was you. You do have full responsibility. He was going to buy a pickaxe. And at the market, you have to pay $7 to buy something. And they will give you points. Well, the pickaxe gives you 5 points, but it gives you a usability. You can get through rocky terrain. Well, he was on a run to the exit.
He was like 2 squares from the end.
And there was no rocky terrain between him and the exit. And Super Trooper goes, what are you doing? You don't need a pickaxe. You don't need a pickaxe. What?
So
what are
you're going to be spending 7 points to get 5.
To get 5 points. You don't need it. You're there. You're right there. And he goes, okay. So he doesn't buy the pickaxe. He bought something else, which was more points. Took a step. And then we had to read a reveal. It was Clank Legacy. And there was a cave in front of him.
The bridge got washed out.
The bridge got washed out. That's right. And the only way across was with a pickaxe. And he had nobody to go back and buy. He was cut right at the exit. And I laughed.
He then had to go all the way around the map to get back in.
I don't think he made it out.
Nah.
He scored, but yeah. I don't think he made it out. And it has forever been a moment. You know, the pickaxe is a reference in our group. It was such a funny moment. And yeah, I loved it.
It wasn't malicious, but it worked out maliciously.
Yeah. It's like the time you convinced me to bet on you in Wonderland's War. We're like, bet on me. And then you played your cards like, fuck you, Hammers. I'm like,
tanked it on purpose.
Then shit. You got any others?
No, I think that's the best one to end on.
Okay. All right. I have one more, but I will stop there. So that's our favorite table moments from the year. We did want to add a couple of words that arose this year to the OMC vocabulary canon. I have three.
Yes, yeah, so you list them.
So one now is the generic, I suppose, curse word of displeasure for anything that happens in any game that's resource related, and that is fucking corn.
Fucking corn.
Fucking corn.
Again, from that famous Zulkin game.
The Zulkin game where corn is everything, and now if you're ever missing a resource in any game, the appropriate thing to say is fucking corn.
Fucking corn.
Fucking corn. The second is girthways.
Girthways.
Girthways. We were setting up tables at CoastCon for games, and Project L says, we need to set these tables up girthways. Now, we all intuitively knew exactly what she meant. But it was disgusting to think of. I'm like, Project L, what the fuck is girthways? And she goes, you know, girthways. So now girthways is a thing. How are we setting up the board? Is it girthways or is it the other
non-girthways.
Ways? Is it the other ways? And the other one is the insult of the year.
Yes.
Which actually, one of my favorite tabletop moments was the banter when we played Orléans. Between
it is such a banter-driven game, isn't it?
But you had the Cracker and the Cracker Jr.
Yeah.
And they were giving it to each other all through the game. And the Cracker Jr. turned to the Cracker and said, what are you doing, Schmucktard? Because he tried to do something he couldn't do. So Schmucktard is a thing now. For 2026, Schmucktard is an official title that can be given to anyone at the table that is fucking themselves. That's it. We got one more.
Yep.
One more. And this is what we're calling our individual game of the year, but it doesn't have to be from this year.
It's not a new game.
It could be a game from this year. It could be a game from last year. But what is your game of the year for 2025? Whatever that is. Over to you.
I'm looking at it. Oh, and it's great. It's great podcasting.
Oh,
it's
yes.
The giant Aeon Trespass box.
Yes.
I just can't get enough.
Yeah. To be honest, it would be mine, but I forgot to, because I don't think of it as a board game. I really don't.
It's like, its own thing.
It's its own thing, and it's almost like a life choice
yeah.
rather than a board game. And if it was in my thought process, it would have been Aeon Trespass, because we have put hours and hours and days and cancelled sessions and rebooked sessions yeah. and 14.
And we're so close to the end of Cycle 2.
So close. But I don't think of it as a board game necessarily.
Yeah.
It is. Clearly it is.
With a lot of gaming, I think one of the things I look forward to the most is these long ATO days.
Yeah. They are good days.
Yeah. I think the game is great as well as that, but just the company for 12 hours,
yeah.
getting through it. The story's awesome.
It is. Yeah. The story, the writing is fantastic in that. So if I'd thought of it, that probably would have been mine. But as it is, it's Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era.
I do feel a bit bad because it'll probably be the same again.
Next year. Could be Sins of Heracles next year.
Yeah, true.
If we get Summer played next year.
Yeah.
So for me, it was Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. I don't think there is a game that's come out this year that has hit me in the feels so hard that it's just the gameplay has resonated. It's on my Token Aspirations, another episode that hasn't been published yet. So spoiler alert, it's on my Token Aspirations to play that multiplayer next year. I think it's got to be the right people. Obviously, you've got to be interested in playing, you know, 3-4 games. You've got to have at least a mild passing interest in Elder Scrolls. Otherwise, you're going to go, oh, this is 12 hours of something I couldn't care less about. But for me, it was fantastic. That's 2025.
That's it, 2025. On to 2026.
2026 starts RFN.
We've had 10 and a half hours of 2026 and haven't even played a game yet.
Not yet. Day's not over. Well, that's it. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste a part of your 2025 listening to how we spend our time, it's always humbling. Till next time, remember, there hasn't been a single day in 2025 that wasn't made just a little bit better with board games. Better than cheese for curing depression. Disclaimer, board games do not actually cure depression. They only hold it at bay temporarily. Still good stuff. Whatever 2026 brings, OMC will be right there with you. Thank you for everything over the year, guys. We love you all. We're very grateful. Anything you want to close out with?
Happy 2026.
Happy 2026. Peace out, mofos. Break. Echoes pound and hearts they quake.